Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
This is the first show of 2020, so Happy New Year. And in this first show of the year, we go to the UK, because there, finally, 3.5 years after the referendum on whether to leave the EU, the UK government has finally managed to pass a law that takes the UK out of the EU. Anyway, all our contributors today are migrants to the UK, but you probably will learn almost nothing about Brexit from this show. So if you're concerned that this is going to be about obscure constitutional corners of Britain or trade rules, then please don't worry. Welcome to Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast about all things intercultural. My name's Anne Fox, and this show is coming to you from Denmark. Find out more about us on www.absolutely-intercultural.com, where you can catch up on the full archive of our podcasts. So, what will we be hearing about? Would our contributors recommend migrating to the UK from the EU right now, for example?
I wouldn't. I don't think I would move to the UK right now if I was thinking about immigrating. I don't think it would be the country that I would go for, because there's so much uncertainty right now about if people can stay.
And how is the transition from freedom of movement to getting permission to stay making migrants feel?
Not humiliating, but it's basically, why do I have to do this? This kind of a resistance that you're trying to do this, to do something that you actually shouldn't, because you've got the right to be here and I shouldn't constantly justify my existence.
Although we talked long and hard about being a migrant in the UK, our third contributor, Conrad, didn't even mention Brexit. Instead, he gave what I think is the best description I've heard so far of what an intercultural coach does.
I like to say that I help people to liberate from the limits of their cultures and teach them how to communicate better with people from other cultural backgrounds.
So let's start. Cristina Costa, originally from Portugal and in the UK since 2007, describes how her reaction to the result of the referendum in 2016 was very emotional, and then goes on to reveal how much or how little they talk about Brexit in her household. Let's go absolutely emotional.
I actually went to bed the day of the voting and said, oh, you know, tomorrow we'll wake up and everything will be the same. And then I woke up to this nightmare that people had voted to leave the European Union. For me, it's more emotional because I think it was a kind of a kick in the teeth of, you know, and from a personal perspective, because you can never not let it be personal in that way. You know, here I am, someone that is trying to be an exemplar citizen, paying my taxes, try to contribute to the community in whichever way I can. And although it's not personal, it does feel personal. I'm being told that I'm not welcome. So that is, you know, that was quite emotional and quite frustrating. I must say that that day I had no action to do anything. It was just a wasted day because my brain couldn't even function.
Can I ask you, has Brexit been a topic of conversation often in your household?
Yeah, well, you know, it's again because we have friends in different countries. We also have a lot of between me and my husband, because it's only the two of us, we don't have children or any other family living in the UK right now. It was more kind of what's going to happen, what we have to think about this. It was we usually talk about this. At the beginning it was frustration, then it starts to become, you know, kind of thinking about what are we going to do, because for example we're now in the process of trying to buy a house somewhere near Durham, and do we wait to see what happens, because we don't want to be caught in another recession and house prices, are they going to go up, going to go down? We don't know. So there's practical things that that are discussed in that way. And then, you know, then there are probably more conversations that are with our circle friends. So for example, at the beginning, it was basically people said, what just happened? You know, people could not think of what had happened, you know, just couldn't really conceive of what had happened, you know, both people in Ireland and in Portugal.
Did you know that if you have an idea for a future show or a comment, then you can leave them on the website at www.absolutely-intercultural.com or on our Facebook page? It was one of our Facebook posts which led me to Konrad Dowiak, originally from Poland, and now a British citizen running his own intercultural coaching consultancy. We talked at length and the topic of Brexit never came up. Instead, we talked about accents and about how much or how little people take you seriously when you speak with an accent. So let's go absolutely accented.
I'm an intercultural communication consultant and coach. I like to say that I help people to liberate from the limits of their cultures and teach them how to communicate better with people from other cultural backgrounds.
The reason we came into contact is through one of the links that I posted on the Absolutely Intercultural Facebook page. We post links a few times a week, which we think would be of interest to people. And this particular link obviously sparked something in you, and it was about the fact that if you have a foreign accent, then maybe people tend not to take you as seriously as somebody who's speaking with a native accent. What was it about that article that made you think, oh yes, I recognize that?
I think it triggered all the bad things in me. Unfortunately, when I moved here, it happened to me so many times, and it still happens here. Just to make it clear, when I think of the US and talking with the Americans, they are very forgiving. And that's probably because everyone is some kind of a migrant there. And they usually compliment the way you speak as long as you both can communicate with each other. Mm. And it's more about the process. And even if the Americans may ask, where is my accent from, that's mostly to mark it as a curiosity, not really an issue.
Mm.
The Scottish people, the Welsh, they are more, way more open and more curious, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the English are kind of a pain when it comes to the conversation.
Oh dear. So does this mean that you found that your expertise was questioned in England because of this?
Basically, there was no expertise whatsoever. So it happened to me many times. And, you know, daily situations, like, for example, trying to explain to your GP. GP is a general practitioner, basically a doctor here.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to explain to your GP what's wrong with your body is complicated. It's normally hard to know all the anatomical details in your native language, and in the foreign language is even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually had to change my GP when he wasn't willing to understand my health problems. And that was diagnosed and treated years before in Poland. So I wasn't considered that whatever I say is valid. So That's our daily situation. Also, when you go to the bank and you try to open a bank account for myself and my partner, that was a nightmare I still remember. Out of 6 or 7 banks with branches in my neighborhood, only one let us use their service after they learned that my partner is in IT, which means that the salary is way higher than the average.
Mm.
For the rest, I was just a migrant with, ironically, with a permanent address in the UK, so that was not the case. And I believe that I was able to open up this bank account finally was because the person from the bank was from Sri Lanka, and we had a really nice conversation about being a migrant here in the UK. And she considered me a proper customer, unlike her colleagues from other banks. So,
I'm surprised, because I thought you were going to mention professional connections, and what you're talking about is everyday life. So that's a surprise.
Yeah, professionally as well. When I was looking for a job, my two master's degrees from Poland didn't really matter here. And all people saw was the migrant. So even though I was working for the clients in Poland, for the companies which operates here in the UK as well, I was good enough to train clients in Poland, not so much in London. That was actually an American company which believed kind of in me, had no problems with continuing our cooperation after my relocation. They actually helped me kind of to establish my credibility here in the UK from scratch. I was apparently not the same person who I was back in Poland. and even though I had proper feedback and a really good feedback from customers of these British firms which hired me, it seemed like it's not valid anymore. It seems like it was from a different planet almost. And no, sorry, you need to start all over again.
Okay, I think we could talk a lot about your experiences, but I see from your Facebook page and from the communication we had before that you're a very positive sort of person. So if we could move on how you turned this to your advantage, then maybe we can learn what some tips about what to do.
So there were times while living in London when I was rather ashamed of my accent. I tried to speak as neutral as possible. I tried to cover my accent, maybe try to speak with, let's say, generic foreign accent, not necessarily Eastern European or Central European. Now I would say that I consider it as a form of a political statement. So it's more that, okay, I have an accent. My passport may show now that I'm British, but obviously I was not born here in the UK. I'm European, I'm different. I'm at least bilingual. That's what I'm proud of. I started to work with migrants because that was a little bit more helpful. My credibility there was was established on the fact that I've been living here for quite a while and I know how to move around the British culture. And even though it kind of grew on me living here in London, at the beginning I was quite critical. Well, I'm Polish, so we criticize everything. So I think my clients felt more secure with me. They can complain on something which is according to their beliefs, according to what they think is worse than in their first country. So maybe it's like they felt they couldn't talk about these things with the British native. Also about the language. I mentioned this correctness, when you talk to the Americans, it's more about the communication. When you talk to the British person, conversation is not really about getting to the point. It's about the art of correctness. It's about being proper, and it's more about the quality of the conversation. So people who talk to me and they feel like they can talk to me, make lots of mistakes regarding grammar, regarding vocabulary, regarding syntax, because they know that I'm as foreign as they are. And we kind of both sides kind of try to maintain the level of understanding each other, but it's the knowledge I transfer to them. It's about helping them, not about correcting them all the time. Because British people, English people, they use lots of understatement, so they're not very clear about the whole situation, which means it's also quite hard to find this level of understanding for both sides. And I think my customers liked working with me because they know that I'm as different as they are. They not feel that it's a threat.
3 years ago in show 208, we spoke to Anya about the Brexit vote. At the time, she was afraid to speak her native Polish in public and worried about being made a second-class citizen in the country she's decided to make her home. So how does she feel now, 3 years later? Let's talk about absolutely fitting in.
I had problems registering with a doctor. So because I moved place, I had to register with a new doctor. I had done that before with three other surgeries, never had a problem. Took half a day off, went to the doctor, had all my paperwork. I checked, double-checked on NHS website, on the practice, GP, the medical practice website. I had my passport, I had my utility bills, etc., etc. And I showed it to the receptionist, thinking, and also I filled in the form that they asked me to, and I took all the paperwork to the receptionist, and then she says, "Are you an EU national?" And I said, "Yes." "Do you work?" And I said, "Yes, at the university, and I'm permanent now at university in Glasgow School of Art." And she said, "Can I see your payslip?" And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, because..." I don't remember exactly what she said, but I'm just like, and I said, like, "But it doesn't say anywhere that I'm supposed to produce a payslip. But if you want to see it, I can show it to you, you know, on my phone." And she said, no, I need a printed copy." And I kind of was basically, you know, taking it back and said, okay, and I left. And then I got really angry because, and I called my Scottish friend, who, again, has a better understanding of the system. And it's like, do they have the right to ask me? And he said, no, not really, they shouldn't ask you. And he actually advised me then to get in touch with an MSP, and I did. But I went back to the practice, and I tried really hard to be as polite as possible. And I said, "Could you please explain to me why you require that proof, even though that information is not on an NHS website, on your practice website, and even on the... you know, in the fold, in the kind of the registration form?" And she was not able, and she just got flustered, and she got defensive, and she got angry with me that I'm asking questions. She said, "Well, if you want, you can call them." And I said, "But I just want an explanation why it is that I need to provide that evidence. It's not that, I mean, like, if I have to, if it says somewhere, black and white, I will. I mean, like, you know, I have no problems providing that. I have nothing to hide, but I just want an explanation." And she was not able to give me an explanation. And then the following day, I went to another practice, and they registered me, you know, with no problem. And for example, so a situation like this, that's the only situation that kind of happened to me. But in situations like this, you kind of suddenly feel, all right, so this is what it might look like after Brexit happens, that you constantly have to justify why you're here, that you're not abusing the system, that you're, you know, paying all the taxes, that you are actually, you know, working, that you are not kind of playing games with them, but you are you've got the right to be here. And I think that kind of a longer, if that was the case, I think that might make me reconsider staying. And the situation in Scotland, of course, is a little bit different. I mean, people are more, I think, kind of a welcoming and open to foreigners. But, I mean, there are these situations, for example, you know, and at bus stops or in shops or in taxis, for example, especially in a taxi where you are in an enclosed space, and they hear my accent and they say, "So where are you from?" And there's always this kind of a, like, you know, I say I'm from Poland, and then there's this kind of pause, and it's like, what is going to be their reaction like? Am I going to get, you know, some sort of a comment like, well, you should pack and go back? And that has never happened to me, and neither has it happened to my friends. But it, just having that thought, you know, it's there, that it's a possibility, and it's a plausible possibility. And then, like, little things, for example, so with that Brexit now, that the last deadline in October, for example, I didn't want to book flights to Poland to go for Christmas, because I thought it's too maybe I'm paranoid, but it's too kind of early after the Brexit date, that if there is a chaos, and, you know, and then I wouldn't like to be in a situation that at the airport I'm stuck, because I'm not. So that's why I didn't book flights.
Thank you to Anya, Christina and Conrad for sharing their experiences with us. You can always catch us on the website and Apple Podcasts, as well as on our Facebook page, where we post interesting links several times a week, and where we connected with Conrad. The next show will be coming to you from Germany on February 7th, hosted by Laurent Borgmann. So Happy New Year and stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.